Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Karen with the Y says music is rocking. Bianca says, for your upcoming conversation with Dr. Anton, maybe discuss the values and how wonderful rooibos tea is for the skin. I didn't actually know that, but we are going to be talking about skin, about all sorts of skin-related issues, and that as a focus on a Tuesday night on the weekly checkup. So certainly I will give him a heads up on that, because certainly that could be very, very, very interesting to add to the whole picture. I still want to know from you who you think is winning the World Cup. 0618951019. Neil says, my dad took me to the 2010 final. Soon as Mandela got onto the field on the golf cart, the whole stadium stood up and cheered Madiba over and over again. This was his unifying power, even when he was old and not near his most sharp. So it's interesting that, because, Neil, I had quite a different response to that. I was also actually at the 2010 World Cup final. And I felt, I mean, certainly I stood up with the rest of the crowd, because I think he deserved the immense respect that the crowd was offering him. But I felt a bit sad for him, to be honest. I felt as though it wasn't really fair to him. You could see that he wasn't quite clear what was going on. So I don't know why I felt a bit uncomfortable with that, but I do see what you're saying in terms of his power. His unifying power was immense, and of course, we're talking about the fact that tomorrow is Mandela Day, and my concern is that it's become a little bit performative rather than a day of substance. Maybe that's what happens with these things. Maybe that's just the normal course of events. Let me know your thoughts, 0618951019. So the South African government, of course, welcomes any United Nations inquiry or report saying that when it reinforces its long-held position that there was some form of genocide or a breach of international law or a focus on the killing of children in Gaza. But the question is what value these reports have other than news, media, social media, etc. Does it have any basis? How much can we rely on these United Nations reports? What value do they have? Anne Hertzberg is a legal advisor of NGO Monitor. She is an expert in lawfare, and she joins us right now. Anne, a very, very good morning to you. Thank you for chatting to us again. I see a United Nations report and I think, ooh, this must be something. And I can't help myself, even though I deal with the United Nations and all of their nonsense in the news almost daily, but it still seems to have an impact on me. Am I different to others?
No, I don't think so. I think good morning.
Good morning.
It's very common, you know, and I think that's the whole point, because you have the United Nations, which in most places of the world has a very high reputation. And so and most people are not familiar with the process of how UN reports are put together. So when they see the UN stamp on something, that definitely confers legitimacy to it.
That is really about perception. Now let's talk about reality.
Yeah, so reality is that the quality of UN reports really varies depending on who is actually putting the report together. So if you have, you know, certain reports that are put together by what are known as the special rapporteurs, and depending on who that special rapporteur might be at any one point, can greatly affect the type of report. Also, whether or not the report is coming out of the Human Rights Council versus, let's say, the Secretary General's office or an independent body of experts. So it really just depends. So you have to actually look at the details. You have to dig deeper beyond just seeing United Nations says.
We know that there are pockets in the United Nations, and maybe I'm even being generous by saying it's only pockets, of people who have a absolute agenda. They're there because they have either a narrative, either they're being paid, either they are whatever it is, they just hate Israel. They are there for one purpose. How much of an impact and how much damage have they done realistically? Because we can say it and we can think it, but how much realistically, in terms of damage, have they done to the United Nations?
Well, they've done tremendous damage because, you know, the United Nations is supposed to be founded on the principles of, you know, equal treatment among nations, objectivity, impartiality, non-discrimination. And many of the reports that are coming out are put together by people who do not adhere to those objectives and those standards. There are also fact-finding standards that UN bodies are supposed to uphold, and many of them don't do that. They operate under secrecy. The people appointed have a prejudicial record, and they're putting together something based on predetermined conclusions. So they have the conclusion at the outset, and then they craft the facts to fit their conclusion. So that is generally what is happening in these reports.
The value of these reports at any ICC or ICJ?
Well, yes. Yeah, so this is what is so damaging about them often is when you look at the ICJ cases against Israel, for instance. And again, people need to understand this because I keep seeing it in the media or politicians saying, oh, the ICJ is the world's top court. And that is simply false. It is not a court over anybody. It is a UN body that was set up to look at questions of international law or questions of disputes between UN bodies. It's actually more for that. UN disputes between UN bodies and disputes between countries if they agree to submit to the court's jurisdiction. So this is not, it's more like I'd put it more akin to kind of an arbitration panel, and then also a body that offers opinions on things. The other thing is these are not judges. These are generally almost entirely politicians with rare exceptions. So the people are coming in, for instance, there used to be the UN representative for Lebanon was the president of the court. He was the first person presiding over the genocide hearings. And that was the time when Israel and Lebanon had no relations. They were in a state of war. You know, this was before the talks that just happened.
Right.
And then because it's a UN court, it's going to credit UN reports, and it has no capability. They have no subpoena capability. They have no capability to verify and examine evidence with proper evidentiary rules. So basically what they do is they just look at a bunch of UN reports that have been given to them, and they're always going to be crediting the UN reports because it's a UN body.
Right.
If it didn't credit the UN report, they would be discrediting themselves.
Yes.
So this is the problem with the ICJ, and the ICC operates in a very similar fashion, because also a lot of the people working at the ICC come from the UN. So they're all part of the system. And again, while they're a little bit better, at least in terms of the judge's office, about some scrutiny on UN reports, it's not great. And certainly, as we saw in the prosecutor's office, they were relying on false data about a famine, and they did not examine if they had been actual credible investigators. If you look at those reports that were coming out in early 2024 about the so-called famine from the UN reporting system, all of them had disclaimers that they were only reporting on part of the aid. they were excluding large swaths of the aid from their data. And none of that was looked at by the ICC when they were putting together these stupid indictments that they came out with. So this is the problem. They are not engaging in credible fact finding, these bodies. And a large part of the problem is their underlying material is not credible.
What happens with the ICC? These warrants exist. What are the next steps here? We know that there's a real credibility issue with it. We've seen Marco Rubio saying, this is they need to be dismantled. But in the meantime, if somebody is a signatory, they've got a problem. Should Netanyahu, for example, travel there? What is like? How does this play out?
Yes. So, well, there should be the vote on Karim Khan within the next couple of weeks, whether or not he's going to be kicked out.
Right.
So that should be coming up. So I think that's depending on what happens with that, that's really going to put the office in chaos. In terms of what Rubio was saying, America has not sanctioned the court as a whole. They've sanctioned individuals. Mm. But I think the court will still try to operate, and I'm sure a lot of the European countries, just to stick it to the Americans, are going to keep funding the ICC. So I think they're going to try to continue business as usual. And even though all of these scandals have erupted, they don't seem to be interested in actually looking at the fact that right. Karim Khan was compromised. And they're still going forward.
So
which no actual court in any country, in any democratic country with rule of law, would do. They would all be like, okay, this is ridiculous. There was some political motivation here, and these indictments should be canceled. But we have not seen that. So I think that process is going to continue.
That's it. So even then, what you're saying is that even if Karim Khan actually is dismissed, sure, it makes it harder for them to justify continuing, given that they've acknowledged that there was a problem. But it might not necessarily mean the end of those cases.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think those cases are going to proceed.
Absolutely,
I think because they are going to claim that, we're not going to bow to the pressure of the Americans.
Right, of course, and in a way, Rubio's statement even perhaps makes it worse, because it forces them to if they change their view on it, it appears as though they have capitulated. So it puts them actually in a strangely difficult position.
Right. I think there were other ways the administration probably could have gone about this that would have been more effective.
Yeah. That is unfortunately where we do need to leave it. Thank you, as always, for bringing us the perspective and just a much better understanding of how this complex world works. Wishing you Shabbat Shalom. Anne Hertzberg, legal advisor of NGO Monitor and expert in lawfare.